In a world of Democrats,
there will be time for them to make profits. Now's not that time.
And Republicans,
I've abandoned free market principles to save the free market system.
You need a voice of liberty. Look no further. You found it. Tom Woods. Beware, citizen. You are now departing from the world of allowable opinion. The Tom Woods Show.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wednesday, November 12th, 2014. And Ben Swan returns to the show today. A lot of you guys know Ben Swan, of course. We all got to know him during the 2012 Ron Paul presidential campaign when he had a segment called Reality Check on a Fox affiliate in Cincinnati, Ohio, and that just became an internet sensation. He's interviewed President Obama about the constitutionality of his kill list. He's produced a huge body of work that you can find online, especially at his website, benswan.com. Couple other interesting things about Ben. He's won two Edward R. Murrow Awards and two Emmy Awards for his investigative journalism. Also, he earned a bachelor's in liberal arts from BYU in 1993 when he was 15 years old. He got his master's in history from California State University at age 16. Ben Swan, welcome back.
Tom, thanks for having me on.
I like to talk to you periodically, see what you're working on. I want people to stay plugged in with you. You're doing important pioneering work as an independent journalist out there, and you always come up with interesting stories. So before we went on together, I said to you, what are you working on these days that's hot? Like, what's interesting? What's fresh? What's getting a lot of interest out there? Or what is it that you anticipate will get a lot of interest? So we identified a couple of topics, both of which sound interesting to my audience. One of them has to do with cannabis, which is a subject you and I have an interest in, not necessarily out of personal experience, but because of the general principles of liberty. But tell me about the angle that you guys have been working on this subject.
Well, and by the way, that's a very important point. You know, a lot of people, when they immediately hear that someone is talking about, you know, cannabis or marijuana, they assume that means that this person desires to use cannabis or marijuana and therefore is advocating for their own personal interests. And with you and I, as you mentioned, that's not necessarily the case. But yeah, look, cannabis is a really interesting story because one of the things that's happening around the country is, and a lot of people don't even know this, state legislatures and you know, lawmakers are looking at legalization bills specific to one compound found inside of cannabis. So a cannabis plant has dozens and dozens of compounds inside of it. And one of those compounds is a chemical compound called CBD. CBD is a chemical compound that has been proven time and again to actually prevent or severely reduce seizures in children with epilepsy. It also has been proven to, at times, cause the remission of cancer. Or to actually remove cancer from someone's body because it recreates as a regenerative process in which it rebuilds human cells. And so CBD, which again, is just a chemical compound inside of cannabis, is legal inside of Colorado. It's becoming legal in about a half dozen states around the country. The problem, of course, is that when you get media and government kind of working together, politicians working together to talk about these issues, they typically misrepresent the issue. And in this case, what's being misrepresented to the public, I think, is this idea, even though no one explicitly says it this way, the idea is that CBD is kind of the good part of cannabis or marijuana, and THC, the chemical that gives you a high, is the bad part. And so we've got to keep the bad part outlawed, but the good part, which we would extract from marijuana, that could be legal, but only if it's done by whom? By pharmaceutical companies and those who are responsible.
So, in other words, this is a case of vested interests who are inserting themselves into an issue of public concern.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then again, one of the things that we have revealed in the piece that we put together, and I'd encourage your listeners to go to benswan.com, and if you click on Truth in Media, you can watch this episode. It's about, I think, 12 to 14 minutes long. A lot of information in there. We go out to Colorado. We talk to people who are being affected by this. And really explain it to you. But at the very end of that episode, one of the things we explained to people is that in 1999, The Department of Health and Human Services obtained two patents for cannabinoids and cannabis oil, specifically cannabis oil. So again, people aren't getting relief from their seizures by smoking marijuana. It's an extraction of an oil inside of the plant that ultimately has CBD in it, and they eat that oil. Health and Human Services holds the patent on this, and right now is leasing the patent out to pharmaceutical companies and a few, you know, large companies around the world. And here in the United States, they are leasing their patent, and that patent, I believe, is leased until the year 2023. So we have, on one hand, Health and Human Services that obviously recognizes the medical value of cannabis oil and cannabinoids, and holds the patent. On the other hand, we have the Department of Justice that is enforcing law on marijuana and cannabis because it is still a Schedule I drug. Schedule I, remember, Tom, means that according to law, the definition of law, cannabis has no medicinal value. That's what makes it a Schedule I drug. Well, so how does our government keep cannabis as a Schedule I drug and then at the same time hold a patent on it for its medical property?
Well, it's interesting that you mention that about its medical properties and the fact that they acknowledge these, because when considering the medical marijuana issue very generally, I recall seeing Ron Paul going on the record as something of an agnostic about the medicinal benefits of marijuana, but his view was, it's none of my business. If people think it helps them, then let them go ahead and use it. And I mean, I don't think he was committing to the view that it absolutely, without a doubt, is helpful, but maybe it is and maybe it isn't. But are you saying that in this case, is it a mainstream view that this compound is helpful?
Oh, yes, it is. It is scientifically proven. There are pharmaceutical companies, there's GBD Pharmaceuticals in the UK that is now developing, I think it's called Sativa, but it's basically a pill that allows you to take the soil. It's been proven over and over. The case in Colorado where this became such a big deal started with a little girl named Charlotte Figge. Charlotte Figge, I think at the time, was 4 or 5 years old and suffered from 300 seizures a day from her childhood epilepsy. This family got in touch with these guys who were actually growing a strain of cannabis that was very high in CBD and very low in THC, and they were actually growing it for cancer patients. And they had never tried it in relation to epilepsy or to given it to a child before. And they gave it to Charlotte Figge, and within 1 week, she went from having 300 seizures a day down to having anywhere from 1 to 2 a day, and I think at the most 8 in a week. And so what we saw was this incredible thing take place. Dr. Sanjay Gupta with CNN has actually gone out and reported on this. It is a medical fact that people who take this oil, and then by the way, Tom, I should mention this too, there are thousands and thousands of families from across the country who are moving to Colorado because their children there legally can take this oil. And that is what's prompting, by the way, state legislatures across the country to now say, let's legalize CBD oil for children with epilepsy and cancer patients. Also, people who have Crohn's disease. We interview a woman who was dying, literally rotting from the inside out from Crohn's disease, and began taking this oil, and all of her symptoms immediately went away. So it's really important for people to understand this is not just, kind of anecdotal stories that go along with this. There's a lot of scientific evidence that demonstrates this does work. The top biologists in the country studying this right now say not only does CBD work, but combinations of CBD, CBN, CBA, THC, so all these different compounds, different combinations work differently inside of the human body. And they say that absolutely, no question, this is kind of the new frontier of medicine. One other thing I say about it, so that people understand, this isn't just a bunch of hocus pocus. The human body actually creates cannabidiols, and that's why we respond well. And listen, I'm no expert on this, okay? But from the research that we've done over the last year on this, the human body creates these. And somebody was explaining to me, they said, people who think this is all very foreign to us need to understand that the largest number of cannabidiols that you will ever intake into your system actually happens at birth, because it's found in mother's breast milk. The largest concentration that we receive as humans happens at that time. Well, remember, Tom, just a few decades ago, we had this push to not breastfeed children in the 70s and in the late 60s. And now, of course, we've come out of that. And today, doctors tell mothers, breastfeed your children as long as possible because of the immunities and the development that happens in your child as a result of that. So it's all kind of tied together, and I think it's an interesting kind of moment in human history, but it is also a freedom issue. Do people have the right to go try this for themselves?
Ben, I usually shy away from issues like this, not because I don't support the families, I do, but I shy away from the scientific angle because I know when I don't know something, you know, and I like to stick to areas that I do know about. And that's why it's great to be on the freedom side of things, because my view would be, regardless of how the science comes down, if somebody is suffering, it ought to be up to that person to decide what kind of remedies are available to try. I mean, for example, I just had Michael Bolden of the 10th Amendment Center on. He told me that in Arizona, overwhelmingly, last week, they passed a ballot initiative saying that if you are declared to be terminally ill, you have the right to try experimental drugs. Well, I mean, what? No kidding, right? There's no, I mean, and I don't have to know the science of those drugs to know that that's a general principle that I'm going to support.
Right, and by the way, and to that point, I think the problem with that bill, if there is a problem, I think the biggest problem with it is that it still restricts what you can try. So it does have these restrictions to say, well, it has to be still FDA approved. It has to be
okay.
Right. So there are a lot of restrictions within that bill that don't just say a right to try bill, in my opinion, should say you have the right to try whatever you want to try.
Yeah, right,
so if you want to drink Drano to try to cure your cancer, I think that's a horrible idea. But if you want to do that, it should be legal for you to do that. And the problem is that this is one of those bills that still goes back to pharmaceutical companies. It protects those special interest groups because, let's face it, if you try to pass a bill that says people can try whatever they want and somebody can't make money off that, it's probably not going to become law.
All right, let's shift gears and talk about foreign policy. You are preparing something, I understand, on the whole ISIS question.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, we're going to be releasing this video here very soon. We've been doing quite a bit of work on it. This is a video that we're hoping will not be a preaching to the choir video of the liberty movement out there. And what we're really hoping to do is encourage people within the liberty movement to take this piece, which very clearly and succinctly explains how ISIS kind of rose to power, and share it with your friends who watch Fox News and watch CNN and who think ISIS is coming to get us, and so we've got to put boots on the ground in Iraq again. And all we're trying to do, Tom, is explain to people this is how ISIS came not just into existence, but how they came to power. And if it were, it's not because of this media lie and political lie of a lack of action on the part of the United States. You know, we keep hearing this thing being said over and over and over that it's a lack of action, a lack of action. And it wasn't. It was actually direct action by the United States that created ISIS in the first place. And that's what we're trying to educate the public on and say, before one more life is lost, before one more soldier is killed, before one more Iraqi is bombed, before we take one more dollar and spend it on this, please understand this is where it all comes from.
Well, that's an important point for any American to hear about. But, you know, on this show, Ben, I particularly tend to focus on the neoconservatives and conservatives who just, I think, thoughtlessly go along with what they're told about foreign policy on Fox News and through their neoconservative magazines that they read and so on, because I used to be one of those people, and I'm particularly sensitive to this. When I see other people being snookered, it fills me with a kind of outrage. And I want to say to them, why is it that on the domestic side, you can clearly understand that there are consequences to price controls, government intervention, financial regulation, whatever it is that you think you're solving, you tend to either intensify or you create a new problem you couldn't have anticipated. And you conclude from this that, you know, the economy and society are just too complex to be able to plan or to be able to predict the long-term consequences of intervention. Okay, you see that point. Why do you not see the ISIS point?
Right. Right. And I think part of it is, you know, it goes back to this idea that ISIS sprouted up, again, because we weren't doing enough. One of the things that neocons, and I like you, I come from a neocon background. And one of the things that neocons immediately think to themselves is that, and I think it's been ingrained into them, is this idea that if the United States is not in control of the chessboard that is the globe, things fall apart. As long as we have our hands kind of in the pie all over the globe, we can somehow prevent bad things from happening and keep the world safe. It's not true. It's a complete lie. But we have been convinced of this lie for so long that you have to really work to help people to see here is the short-term, long-term ramification. Now, the positive in all that is that we live in such a remarkable time because of the internet and the acceleration of events. That with this ISIS video in particular, we only have to go back to 2006 to show you where ISIS started. We only have to go back as far as 2009 to show you where they changed their strategy. We only have to go, Tom, back to 2012 and 2013 to show you how the United States armed, trained, and funded the rebels in Syria who became ISIS. And so I think because of the timeline of history, is so short to show this to people, we have an opportunity unlike what we had with, for instance, explaining the creation of the Mujahideen and Al-Qaeda to fight the Soviets in the late 70s, which ultimately became, you know, led to the attacks of 9/11 in 2001. That's such a long span of history, I think people have a hard time with it. But when you can show someone, 18 months ago, this happened, and now, you know, here we are a year and a half later, and now this is happening, I think it's easier for them to absorb.
And you're right. I mean, first of all, the fact that the times you're dealing with, as you say, are so short, makes it impossible for people to say, that's ancient history. As they tried to say in the late 70s when the hostages were taken in Iran, people said, well, this may have something to do with resentment over the coup in 1953 that was assisted by the CIA in Iran. And the famous response to that was, well, that's ancient history. But it's not really that long ago. But certainly the time span you're talking about is very, very short. And now this is a topic, by the way, that I don't see how you could have a more important issue to talk about, because this is the issue, this ISIS situation that took even some people who had followed Ron Paul for a long time and thought he was a heroic guy and stuck by him on non-intervention. But a lot of those people jumped off that train and said, well, in this case now, we can't be dogmatic about non-intervention. Once in a while, you got to get in there and crack some skulls. I hope this can also reach those people.
Well, and I completely agree with you. I think what has been fascinating to me, and I got a chance to talk with Dr. Paul about this recently. You know, he was lamenting the fact, how do we go from just a year ago talking about, you know, intervention in Syria, and the United States public, to the tune of what, 89% of the public said we are not going to Syria. It was so bad, Tom, that Congress wouldn't even vote on it because they were so afraid of the ramifications of it. And so we went from that to 2014, just a year later, and a huge amount of the public, two-thirds of the public, saying, yes, we should go after ISIS and intervene in Iraq, and one-third of the population saying we should put boots on the ground. And expect that number to even rise now that we have a Republican-controlled House and Senate saying, yes, let's go, boots on the ground in Iraq again. I think what we have to look at is, again, if we can pause the fear, pause the salacious images of people having their heads cut off, and just stop for a second and say, wait, before you get caught up in the media hype that keeps telling you every single day that ISIS is waiting under your bed for you to fall asleep, if we can push past that for a second and just think for a minute, recognize these were the steps that we took that created ISIS. And essentially, Tom, it comes down to two things, right? It's two things that happened. One is the war in Iraq in the first place, the toppling of Saddam, the overthrow of the government there. But even if we had done that and left and not left behind all of our equipment and not gone into Syria and trained rebels in Syria and armed rebels in Syria, ISIS still wouldn't be there. We still could have created the quagmire, the mess that we left behind in Iraq, and these guys would not have come to power. It was step one in creating the power vacuum, step two, arming, training, funding them so that they could rise. It's I think that when people see that, it's very difficult to argue that we should be back there. Now, you're still going to have people say, well, what now? We got to do something now. Now we have to intervene. Now we have to do something.
Right.
You know, and that's a whole other argument.
Right. Now, I want to make sure before I forget, when people go to benswann.com, and that's with two N's, by the way, benswann.com, how do people get your content? Do they subscribe to it? Do they just go to your website? Do they follow you on social media? What's the delivery mechanism for it?
So right now there are several things you can do, and it's all of those. You can go to the website because every day we have about 8 writers who are posting stories every day on our website, and I think they're really interesting stories, and they deal strongly with foreign policy and civil liberties, et cetera. So you can go there and check those out. And you can follow me on Twitter, which is @BenSwann_, or just search BenSwann on Facebook. You can find me there. But quite candidly, Tom, the best way for people to get content from us is to subscribe to our newsletter. Because by subscribing, we are sending out once a day a newsletter that will have all of our stories for that day in it. And it makes it much, much easier for folks to get that content. Remember, with a lot of these social media sites now, they are forcing you to pay to access the people who follow your pages.
Right.
So I have people who tell me all the time, they say, what happened to you? Why are you never on Facebook anymore? I never see anything that you put up there.
Yeah, I'm Facebook like, well, all the time. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we put stuff on Facebook every single day, every single story that we do. But, you know, of the 150,000 plus people following us, you know, maybe about 1,500 are being allowed to see our content for each individual story just because Facebook says either you pay us or no one's going to see your content. So the newsletter is the way to go.
Well, that's funny. I have a newsletter also on my own, TomWoods.com. And, you know, I think it's got pretty decent content. I mean, for now, it mostly keeps people posted about my show. But when I'm not totally swamped making homeschool videos for Ron Paul's program, I'll be able to make a you know, more substantial newsletter again. But it still, you know, conveys information. But it is like pulling teeth to get people to sign up for a newsletter. Like, I'll give you a free ebook. I'll, you know, take your kids to school. Like, whatever you want me to do. You know, it is hard to get people to sign up, but it's a valuable thing. And it is a way. And by the way, anybody who has a blog or has a site or is doing the kind of thing Ben's trying to do, that's what any marketer will tell you. You got to start collecting email addresses so that drive-by visitor who stops by your site once doesn't just leave forever. You can keep in contact with that person. Now, by the way, do you send it out? I'm getting a little bit into the weeds here, but I'm interested in this stuff. I'm interested in entrepreneurs and independent people like you. When you send out your newsletter every single day, is the subject line just, this is today's Ben Swann newsletter, or is there always some catchy subject line that's different every day?
So every day our subject line is the top two stories on the site for that
day.
Okay. So you'll see, you know, for instance, yesterday, I believe we talked about third party candidates who did well in the 2014 midterms. And we talked about this civil asset forfeiture deal where cops were caught on video saying, steal all the good stuff, right? So we'll put those headlines as our subject line.
I'm just, because I always wonder how I should do that. Peter Schiff just sends out the same subject line for every email, and I don't think that's effective. But on the other hand, I'm afraid if I just put the subject line, I just put one item that I'm covering, people will think, well, I'm not interested in that item. But I have like 12 more inside, you know, so I never know exactly how to handle that. So I was curious to know how a master does it.
Well, and we're certainly not masters at it, but I think that we have a very strong web team, and they're pretty clever. And by the way, one of the ways to also build your email list is to give away stuff. And so we're going to actually increase that. Every month we're going to be giving away. In fact, I think coming up here in December, in time for Christmas, we're going to give away some body armor to people who are interested in that. So we did an AR-15 giveaway a few months ago, and we had a great response to that.
All right. Well, it makes my little ebook seem kind of stupid by comparison. Well, listen, best of luck, Ben. The site is benswann.com, Ben Swann with two N's. We'll get you on sometime soon again. Talk about some more stories that you're covering.
Sounds good. Thanks so much, Tom. Appreciate your work. Appreciate what you're doing.
All right, everybody. Tomorrow we're going to be talking to Alex Epstein on the release date of his brand new book, The Moral Case for Fossil Fuels. Then Friday, it's George Reisman coming back to the show to talk to us about who really creates jobs. Get your daily serving of Liberty education by subscribing to The Tom Woods Show on iTunes or Stitcher. You can do that using the links at TomWoodsRadio.com. And, of course, one last plea, like I'm never going to make this plea again. Check out my new book, Real Dissent, A Libertarian Sets Fire to the Index Card of Allowable Opinion. Lots of fun stuff in that book. I've been very gratified by the feedback so far. Check it out at realdissent.com. And if you haven't already, you are entitled to one free audiobook via the offer at tomwoodsaudio.com. And remember, I narrate the audiobook version of Real Dissent. So check that out. Thanks for listening, everybody. See you tomorrow.
The Tom Woods Show.